Hello, this is Janet Gallen welcoming you to Love Letters Live. Today's guest is someone who has been with us before. It is David Friedman, who is a composer and an author and a, as he says, metaphysician. And I'm going to let you explain mm-hmm. that in a minute. Mm-hmm. And you also were a motivational speaker. Uh-huh. And when I first met you, I realized that time has its own standards and that people actually probably do have different amounts of it. Because there is no way you can do what you do and be all over the country in 24 hours a day and just seven of them in a week.
I actually think that myself sometimes.
Okay, I guess we can talk about that. So would you please just tell a lot about yourself and what you do and what keeps you going and what you want to bring to others, but start with what is a metaphysician?
Well, metaphysics, meta means not visible. And so, like occult, the word occult actually means invisible. And so a metaphysician is someone, I guess physician, I don't know why it's called that, but I work with spirit. I work with things unseen. I work with
people's with spirit or the universal
people's
spirit?
People's spirit. And, uh-huh. and you know, in my work, I do something called The Thought Exchange, which mm-hmm. is a book I wrote and which is a work I developed. And the main purpose of that work is that we all know that you hold positive thoughts and positive things happen, et cetera, but we don't seem to be able to do it. I mean, everybody mm-hmm. read The Secret.
If, we could do it, there would never have to be another book.
That's right. That's right. But we just don't, you know, people read The Secret and they go, oh, that's fabulous. I just take on a positive thought and then that's all I have to do. Except I noticed that people were, within 2 seconds, going back to their old thought. And I thought, we're not stupid.
Wait, their old thought or their old behavior?
Well, if thought causes
okay.
behavior, then obviously they were not holding the positive thought because they... And I didn't even use the word positive. The word positive... a positive thought is a thought that brings about a result that you desire. As I always say, you know, if you were a masochist, you'd say, I went out on a date and the person didn't hit me, didn't beat me up, nothing happened, it was terrible.
Bad date.
Yeah, exactly. So
worst date I ever had.
Yeah, exactly. Nothing. So, but when we're holding the thoughts we wish to hold, and then suddenly we find that we're behaving in ways that are not that, I thought, why? We're not stupid. We're, you know, people are serious about making their lives better. People are willing to work. We have people who have vision and understand a lot. Why is this happening? And so I started to look and say, what's going on here? And what I came across was an area which is sort of disregarded. In fact, in New Thought and Spirit, people are trying to get around it, and that is the area of our sensations, our experience.
Wait, so how are people trying to get around that area?
Well, people, if you look at all of life, people are trying to say, I want to feel good and feel not upset, and they're saying, I have a pain, so I want to release it, I want to let it go, I want to not have it.
People, so they're getting around, they don't want to feel the pain, they're not letting that
right.
realization that they're in pain.
Right, okay. Or that they're in whatever, they don't want to feel their bodies.
Right.
I mean, you look at any commercial, and it's like, oh my goodness, you had a pain, take something. Thing quickly, you know, mm-hmm. get rid of it. And so what I realized was that when we take on these quote-unquote positive thoughts, if we have had a negative association with them as children, for instance, if you said, I can do this as a child, and someone slapped you across the face and said,
oh,
no, you can't,
stop saying that,
then anytime you say as an adult, I can do this, you get a sensation in your body.
Now, so you're saying it inside to yourself even and you get the sensation.
Yeah,
is that
you think it. You think, I can do this, and you feel this funny, you know, like you're going to be slapped mm-hmm. or whatever. So you go, oh my goodness, I got to get away from that. And so you take on what I call a protective thought, which is, I can't do it.
Oh,
and
how
there
safe.
You are. Yeah.
You won't get slapped.
Yeah. And except that when you take on, so when you take on that thought, which people would call a sabotaging thought, but in fact I call a protective thought, then you feel less pain.
By the way, if you call it a protective thought, if you call it a sabotaging thought, you've already denigrated yourself further.
That's right.
If you call it a protective thought, you've done something reasonably
right.
positive.
So you're not like, what's the matter with you? You can't seem to do this. It's something is paining you and you are taking an action to get rid of the pain. But when you take on the protective thought, then you start to take action within that and then your protective thought plays. So you see in the world, I can't do it. But you've protected yourself from an uncomfortable sensation. So you think.
Mm-hmm.
The moment you realize the results you have, what happens? You remember what it was you wanted, And then you're right back in the pain. So it's like a diet. You say, I'm going to diet. Then you hit a sensation of discomfort because you've put on the weight to avoid a sensation. I just lost 50 pounds. And at certain weights, I would bounce off them a few times because everything would come up that I ran away from
when
I hit that weight.
Well, in dieting, because I think that would be helpful.
I would diet and suddenly I'd hit, 190 and I'd have a great sadness come up in me. Well, whatever was going on at that weight that I started eating to avoid would be there waiting for me at that weight.
So that's a really not obvious thing. You've got to pay attention to
what people say, like when Oprah would say, oh, I'm on this diet and it's fabulous and I feel wonderful. That's why she always gained back the weight, because you don't feel wonderful when you're on a diet. You feel what you feel. But as an adult, the premise of this work is that when you take on a thought, it's going to come with whatever sensations it comes with. If you want to hold that thought, you have to experience the sensations. Now, when you do, this is twofold. First of all, you get to see in manifestation what you want, because it's always here in the invisible
world. But you've
got
to be an aware human being to start digging for what that is.
Of course,
right?
Or just what you do is you stop. I say, the book is called The Thought Exchange, Overcoming Our Resistance to Living a Sensational Life. So you stop. And instead of going, I've got to fight this off, I've got to do this, you stop and you experience what's going on in my body, just as it is. I have a tightness. I have a wonderful story. This was so great. I was winning a Mac Award for Lifetime Achievement, and Lucy Arnaz was presenting it to me.
And in theater.
So in cabaret. It's the big Manhattan Association of Cabaret Awards, and they gave me a Lifetime Award. And so Lucy was presenting it to me, and Lucy and I are backstage pacing the floor. You know, she's got to go on and expound on my virtues for 5 minutes, and then I've got to go on and sing and talk. And so we're both nervous, and Lucy does thought exchange with me. And so Lucy stopped, and she said, all right, what are my sensations? And she said, my throat is tight, my heart is pounding, my stomach is churning, and my hands are shaking. Mm-hmm. And just at that moment, the announcer said, ladies and gentlemen, won't you welcome the one, the only, amazing Miss Lucy Arnaz. And she looked at me and she said, I can go out there with that. And she walked out.
Oh, so she exchanged all that she was feeling for that introduction.
Well, she kept the thought, I can go out.
Yes.
What she meant is I can go out there with a pounding heart and
because
shaking hands.
Because of what she heard about the one and only,
No, that was the threatening part, you see. That was, my God, I'm not the one and only, I'm shaking and I'm this and that.
I see.
And she said, when they announced her and she was required to be the one and only, she knew that the way to be the one and only was to have a pounding heart and have shaking hands. People who are very successful are not unafraid. They are willing to feel these sensations. I never go on a stage where my heart isn't pounding and where I'm not shaking and where I'm not thinking I'm going to drop dead. But I am willing to experience that.
Yes.
You know, you want to run the marathon.
Uh-huh.
And what you need to run the marathon is to hold the thought, I can run the marathon. When you hit mile 20, you feel like you're going to pass out. If you don't want to tolerate that sensation, there's an easy way to stop it. Say, I can't run the marathon, and you'll stop, but you won't get to run the marathon.
Mm-hmm.
And so in things like dieting, we go on the diet, we hit the uncomfortable sensation, we say, oh, well, you know, I can't do it, and I can eat a little bit, or my favorite one is, I'm getting thin too fast, I must be sick, I better eat something to make sure that I'm not sick.
You've heard people say that?
I say it.
Okay.
That was one of my things on the diet. And so, and then you take on the protective thought, I can eat, you eat, and you don't lose the weight. So then you go, no, but I wanted to be on a diet. And then the sensation comes up again, and then you go to the eating. So the trick to being on a diet.
So it's a bad little cycle.
Yeah, well, it's a cycle that anything, if we wanted to write a book all our life, if we want to meet someone, if we want to whatever, mm-hmm. that's the cycle that we are in when we are in protective thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you want your thought to go through to manifestation, you have to simply be with the sensation that comes up. And there's a twofold healing. See, those sensations are there because your inner child, when you said, I can do this, and someone slapped you, and your inner child felt that sensation, there was no competent adult there to say, oh my goodness, I see what you're feeling. I can feel that with you. And so the child was all alone, and the child is constantly enacting its plight in hopes that you, the adult, will feel it. But then we get into a plight and we try and get rid of the plight. We try and fight it off. It's like screaming at the mirror. When we stop and go, oh, this is the way it feels, The inner child is finally seen. The event will never go away. Things will never not have happened. But the inner child now has someone with it. It doesn't have to enact it. So what I do, whenever I have an uncomfortable sensation when I'm doing something I want to do, and like I'm doing this concert tonight, and I can hear my inner child saying, you can't do this concert. It's going to be a disaster. The people are going to hate you, all this. And I say to my inner child, rather than what standard wisdom is cancel, cancel, don't think those thoughts. Imagine if a child came to you and said, I'm very upset. And you said, I release you. I'm canceling you. I'm putting you in the closet because you're interfering with my career. It would start screaming. So when I feel those, when I hear those thoughts and I feel those sensations, I say to my inner child, of course you feel that way. Mm-hmm. How could you not feel that way, mm-hmm. given what happened to you? I know what happened to you. And even if I don't know what happened to you, if you're feeling that way, I assume something did. Mm-hmm. And I just say to the child, of course you feel that way. Of course, I'm with you. This is what comes up in you when I have to do a concert. And I let the child be there and hold it and do the concert.
Now, how does that translate to the healing? How does that translate to then you can go out?
The healing is, well, let's say...
I mean, do you realize that you're not that child anymore?
Yes, the point is that are not that child. So the healing is, you know, if you have somebody with you who is very afraid of something that you're not afraid of, mm-hmm. you can allow them to be afraid. You can say, take my hand. You don't need them. See, our parents often needed us not to be afraid because they were afraid or tried to fix it. Or say,
or they needed us to be afraid.
That's right. Yes. There's something there. I had a thought exchange client who's a grandmother, and she was walking with her 2-year-old granddaughter, and they had her baby doll carriage and her little doll. And the baby doll carriage fell down the stairs, and the baby doll fell out. And the girl was hysterical, screaming and crying. And my client said to her, oh, honey, it's all right. Don't worry. Nothing happened. The girl kept screaming. She said, it's okay. You see, the doll's okay, screaming. And suddenly she went, oh, wait a minute. She sat down with her, and she said, that must have been terribly frightening. And the girl said, yes, it was. Now the girl is understood and seen.
And the girl realizes that she can live with something frightening.
That's right, because it's experienced with someone.
It doesn't mean she has to.
Yeah, I found recently my partner and I were having a talk, and I found out that he has carried the thought his whole life, that from his childhood, that he cannot be loved. Now, I cannot convince him, and I carry the thought that I cannot be seen and supported. So in the early part of our relationship, all I was seeing in him was he cannot see me and support me, and he was seeing that I don't love him enough. And this is what we're talking about. These old things from many, many years ago are coming up. Now, I cannot make him, if I say, oh, no, don't be silly, of course I love you, I must convince you that I love you, I'm denying his inner child's experience, which is, so what I do is I go, oh, my God, I can feel what it felt like for you and what it feels like for you to think I cannot be loved.
But can you nip that? You know, you're talking about this, and I had a memory of when my mother decided to learn how to use a computer. This was many, many years ago, but she was in her late 70s. And, you know, smart as a whip.
Right.
And this was foreign and guaranteed to cause frustration. And I showed her the little Mac tutorial about the goldfish and the And I'm showing her this, and she's kind of whizzing along, and she's getting a feel for it, and my father is standing in the room.
Right.
Lovely, smart man, who is such a positive person, really, and enables growth and independence.
Uh-huh.
And looks at my mother and says to me, you know, she's going to have trouble with this.
Uh-huh.
And I said, oh, I don't think so, Daddy.
Uh-huh.
And we go a couple steps farther, and she hits a little snag, and she gets it, and he says to me, you know, she's going to find this hard. She really is going to have trouble with this.
Right.
I said, the third time he said it, I said, you know something? The only trouble she's going to have with this is you.
Right.
Could you please leave the room?
Right, right. Now,
and
that's an adult.
And we all laughed.
But that's adults dealing with adults. Well, his inner child
but
was talking about the trouble.
You can nip it in the bud.
You can now. But the thing is, you can't nip something that happened
already. Oh, that's right. It's already a full-grown tree.
There. Well, or something that happened. You can't.
Right.
I love when people say, that shouldn't have happened. And it's like, cannot not have happened.
But it did, darling.
It happened.
It did.
Yeah, but you are bland.
Yes.
You are.
Yeah.
And so what happens is all that you need, you see, when I know I'm talking to someone who has the experience that he can't be loved, and I can be with and be, I'm feeling what it feels like that you feel you can't be loved, that's loving him. Because that's being with him as he is. And any time that comes up, I would go, oh, I see that. Of course I see that. And so you're not denying the experience. And in yourself, I always walk around with two lines, one line between me and you, and one line between me and my inner child.
What does that mean, one line between?
Just a line of connection.
Oh, yes. And so, from person to person.
Yes. And so, for instance, if you say, if I'm talking to you and you say anything that challenges is even too strong a word, that kind of says that maybe what I'm saying, that there's something else to it or whatever, my inner child goes, oh my God, I'm stupid, I'm terrible, nobody. Mm-hmm. And so I hear that and I just go, yes, uh-huh. And then I respond to you as an adult saying, well, let's look at that, et cetera. If I don't, I will respond to you from my inner child and I'll start arguing with you, in which will prove to you that I am stupid.
Right.
And my inner child will put in front of me the same experience that it had so that I can see it. So I always take care of my inner child, although in truth, I always say, I always know when my partner is talking as a child and when he's talking as an adult. I'm much less clear as to when I'm talking as a child.
I say that about other people's scripts.
Exactly. Yes. So this sense, basically, I have people experience their sensations, experience what's going on in them when they have things. And people, the biggest misconception in New Thought is that when you get what you want, you will feel good. And in fact, in order to have what you want, you often have to feel very uncomfortable, which is not a negative. It is actually going back and claiming mm-hmm. the parts of you that were not seen. And at this point, once you pass infancy, most people spend their lives trying to find a partner that will see them perfectly the way they should have been seen. But mm-hmm. all the partner sees is the inner child coming at them. They try to find enough money. They try and find enough power. Yeah. They try and find the right relationship. In fact, the only one who can see you is, I wrote a song about that called I Can Hold You, which I wrote to myself, which is I'm the only one who can see me because I can feel perfectly what I'm feeling. As a kid, I remember, and this was an interesting wish, which I understand psychologically, I used to wish that there was a machine where you could go to the doctor and you would put your finger on it and he would put his finger on it and he would immediately in his body
yes,
feel exactly as you feel.
Oh, me too.
Yeah, exactly what the pain is, exactly where it is.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah.
What a
time saver for
yes,
starters.
Yes, exactly. But
and it'll get that little son of a gun to stop saying it's just pressure when it's pain.
That's right.
Oh, I know.
That's right. And I say to people, there is somebody who you can do that with, and it's yourself. And you sit down and you go, I see, I feel that, uh-huh, yeah, oh, that's exactly how I feel. Wow, that is painful. And then what happens is I'm thinking of the story of your mother. It doesn't matter what your father says,
mm-hmm.
because your mother is in touch with herself and knowing, oh, that, like I tell people.
Well, I could tell she was willing to buy it.
Yeah.
That's why he had to leave the room.
That's right, yes, because she got out of touch. And also they're in a marriage because they feed that. You know, that's part of what we feed when we do that. So when you're in touch with yourself and you just can feel whatever is going on and go, uh-huh, I see, that's what's going on.
There, you know, there's also, as you're talking about, there's also the, and maybe I'm just from your position here and what your, you know, your philosophy, I could be just wrong, but I think sometimes people prevent you from doing something or try because they think they're being helpful and you won't hurt yourself.
This is the thing that you find when you go, it's funny.
The next act you do will kill him.
Yeah. But I often find that when people go home to their difficult parents, for instance, as adults, I always say, don't go home as you're trying to fix something with your parents. Go home on an exploratory trip with your inner child. And so when your mother says that thing to you that drives you nuts, instead of saying, Mother, I can't believe you said that, turn to your child and go, oh my God, I see that. Wow, you were subjected to that your whole life. Ouch.
Oh, so learn.
Learn and be with the inner child. Uh-huh. Heal the inner child. And the thing is, what you were saying, my father's 93, and we really get along beautifully. But in my childhood, my father hit me. It was a very challenging childhood. Once you get this about your inner child, you get that, you know, it's sort of like in theater, they teach you. My friend Jack Plotnick was in Gods and Monsters, and he played this really creepy, evil reporter, kind of sleazy. And I said, how did you play such a creep? And he said, he's not a creep. He's desperate for love, and he's trying to this and that. He was inside that person. Mm-hmm. We discovered that most of the time our parents told us things because they thought they were protecting us because of their own fear. So what happens is all of that, oh, my mother did this, my father did that, it all goes away. And you just go, oh, I see my mother.
Well, you know, you test something on something else interesting about liking. I have a friend who's an actor, and we were talking once about, well, he played Joseph McCarthy.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And he said to play a character well, even a monster, you have to be able to like him.
Yes.
And right. I could not conceive of such a thing.
Right.
But I guess that understanding of who that
Causes the person to do that? The amount of pain, the amount of, you know, I mean, this is unpopular, but can you imagine how much pain Adolf Hitler was in? Can you imagine what was going on inside of him that he would have to express that pain?
Yes.
You know, and so you don't love the acts that people do, but when you can't understand a person's pain, it's because you can't understand your own. And so you're pushing it away and saying that person, the whole thing, you know.
And there's also the line between you can understand the person's pain and still need to get them off the planet.
Well, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, but Alice Miller wrote a book called For Your Own Good, which is about child rearing practices in Germany at the beginning of the 20th century that created a country that could tolerate that. And what happened was people were so punished and shamed that they had this shame inside of them that they couldn't tolerate, so they had to project it out and say, those people are awful and try and kill
them. Well, mister, you've got endless work to do because not just Germany, but look at the whole world.
That's right.
And see what people tolerate and put up with.
That's
in
right.
In their governments, in their tyrannies,
right.
in their torturous...
And people in a certain way...
Oh, you're going to be busier than ever.
Create that. See, people need that as an expression. We need, when you saw, I do an exercise where, because we really, this is the interesting thing. We talk about manifestation and stuff like that. In truth, we live in the invisible world of experience. We don't live in the physical world. I'm sitting here looking at you, but I could not prove that you're sitting here.
Oh, for sure.
I do know that I experience you if you were, if I were dreaming. Right. That experience you. So all that happens is interior experience. We have thoughts and we have sensations that are being experienced by
an observer inside. Yes.
That doesn't need anything, doesn't require anything, doesn't lack anything. And so when we understand...
On the other hand, if you're experiencing me and I'm actually not here, do you get carted away for your own protection?
No. No. We experience a lot of things that are not here. If I start acting in the world in a way that does something like that, then the world will caught me away. But who knows if I actually need that protection. The thing is, there is only experience. There is nothing that happens. When you look at the world, you're looking at your interior thoughts and sensations. You're looking at what you think and what you feel. And other people could think and feel other things. And that's all you're looking at. There is nothing happening in the world. And the thing is, people try and change that. Mm-hmm. What you're essentially saying is, I'm going to go to another mirror and look at myself.
Hence the metaphysical part of your functioning.
Yes. Yes. Now, for instance, I tell this story in a talk that I do, and I'm not doing this Sunday, so I'll tell it now. I was actually at a dinner party years ago, and there was this woman there who was going through a very messy divorce, and she was really hating her husband. And she said, that SOB has taken everything. I am destitute. I have nothing. The only thing he's left me is the apartment, and I have to sell it to survive. I am destitute. And someone said, how much are we asking for the apartment? And she said, oh, $7,750,000.
Yeah.
And so we laugh because we say, oh, the poor thing is down to her last $7 million. But the poor thing... looks at $7 million and sees destitution.
And she's looking that she's abandoned also, no?
So, but I'm saying she experiences destitution with $7 million.
Right.
Imagine the magnitude of her feeling of abandonment, of her feeling of destitution, of her feeling of her interior.
Perception.
And so $7 million in itself doesn't mean anything. I have a friend who grew up in a very wealthy family that drank away their money. She thinks that money causes people to fall apart. She throws money away. She eschews money all over the place. So all of these things, when we realize we're living in the world of experience and who we are is an invisible observer looking at our thoughts and sensations. We are not our thoughts and sensations. And that invisible observer always is in infinite possibility, does not need anything. If you notice a judgment about a thought you're having, that's not your observer. That's the observer noticing a judgment you're having. So there is really nothing for us to do, nowhere for us to get. I mean, I'm learning this now. You mentioned at the beginning about my schedule. I'm on a tour now. It's speaking, concerts, college teaching, book sales. I'm doing 30 events in 31 days in 9 cities.
And still have time for friends.
And time for plenty of body work also.
Oh, okay.
I am doing all sorts of healing work in between. I'm really, but the only way I can do it is right now, you and I are here chatting. That's happening.
Yes,
now.
You're not spending this moment worrying about your next moment and then deleting this moment and having to catch up
and
with it.
And if I am worrying about the next moment, I'm noticing that I'm worrying about the next moment because that's what
you know,
inner child does.
I'm noticing.
Yeah.
Just being here with you, it is so easy to stay in the present.
Uh-huh.
My mind hasn't wandered for 1 second.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And I have a lot going on in here.
Yeah, yes.
And I can do a lot of things at one time in here.
Yes.
But I'm not.
Yeah, because all of it is here. And
really
the future,
a beacon of light.
Thank you. The future and the past don't exist. They are just in the present in terms of experience. So what you're doing with your inner child, where people get confused, is they think, oh my God, I'm terrified, because they're feeling the sensations of terrified. But it's not about, they're feeling it in the only place they can feel it, which is your own body.
Right.
But it's about the past.
Well, let me ask you something, because two things. We have not had a chance to talk about some of the other things you do. So please, let's give your website, because I want people to be able to go there and see what else. I want them to know about your music.
Which is really what I do. All
that's
this we're talking about, but really what I am as a composer, that's what I do.
And, and you've got shows on Broadway, and you're once a month on television.
The Today Show,
Yes, the Today Show. What, composing extemporaneously a song?
The Today Show is a wonderful gig. We've been doing it for about 7 years. Kathy Lee had the idea. It's called Everyone Has a Story.
Yes.
And what people do is they send in their stories about triumph, about, you know, if their child has had some rare disease that's been conquered, then they talk about how they've dealt with it and the foundation they've started or whatever to do it. We then pick a story.
And write a song.
We write a song about it. We fly them in. We bring a Broadway star on to sing it to them.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. So stay tuned. Everybody, please go to the website that
which is Midder, M-I-D-D-E-R, music.com.
M-I-D-D-E-R-M-U-S-I-C.com. And you will be in for a world that you probably can't even imagine.
I can't imagine.
Right. And I have one other question, just because I'm about love letters, and certainly with all the time you have left over, you can write a few.
Yeah.
But I'm just wondering, have you ever written them to yourself as a way of documenting your own life in your own hand? Just every once in a while, drop yourself a note, mail it to yourself, and then let somebody find it in some old drawer years later, and they will know they've come upon musical history gold?
I have never done that. That's
what
a
would
very
you think
interesting
about it?
Idea. I would think about it. That's a really interesting idea.
Because, you know, it's that expression of perfect faith, planting a tree under whose shade you know you will never sit.
Yes.
But when you look back, the discovery of old letters thrills the world like nothing I've ever seen.
I just found a letter in my mother's things.
There you go.
In my mother's things, written on my parents' 50th anniversary, saying, "Dear Shirley, I have to tell you that, you know, everything in my life that is good and valuable is because of you.
And
the way our sons have turned out is wonderful. And, you know, I've always loved you and I always will." And
you saw that in
by
her
my
handwriting.
My father's.
He wrote
that. And my father now, actually, we moved him into assisted living. He just met someone. He's having a wonderful time.
Oh, wonderful.
He burst into such tears when I showed him that letter. And I framed it, and it's sitting in our hall.
And that is always the case. The found letters are portals to doors you thought were closed or that you never imagined were there.
I had no idea my father had that kind of sentiment.
Oh,
I mean, it was just, and he just started weeping, he just said, that's true.
And by the way, isn't that a nice thing for you to discover that legacy, that you come from that kind of love?
Absolutely.
Because you
Absolutely.
Didn't know?
Absolutely.
Oh, write
so
those,
moving.
Everybody, write the letters,
yeah.
stick them somewhere, they'll yeah. be found, and let them learn a little something about you.
Yeah.
Even
oh, nice.
Even generations later.
I
oh,
just,
thank you
Oh,
for
I have ideas
that.
Already for what to send.
Perfect. Thank you, dear, for doing this with yeah. me. I just love
oh,
listening
I
to you.
I love doing
and
it. It goes so
you.
Fast.
And I love your pace, of course, and, and everything else about you. Thank you. Well, until next time, this is Janet Gallen and...
David Friedman.
Saying goodbye. And remember, if you think you need a special occasion to write a love letter, writing a love letter is a special occasion.